Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Oh, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Folgers in your cup, or perhaps the Walmart, Costco, or Kroger brand, whatever your pleasure is, getting a nice warm cup of coffee is often a good idea prior to listening to this show, because you want to be alert as we're going to stimulate a brain cell or two. We call this a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Adam, well, that would be I. Professor is Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, who hangs his hat in a place where it's warm right now, Boca Raton, Florida. He is one of the biggest experts in the whole universe on presidents, U.S. presidents, especially those from the last 100 years or so, and American history in general. He teaches part-time. He is an author, blogger, and all-around interesting dude. He will be on the air with me shortly as we dial the telephone, patch a few cables, and place his dulcet tones on our airwaves. Coming up after this show, Linda Sims discusses current events in and around Marion. Don't want to miss that. And then following the noon features, Now with Scott Spears. And not surprisingly, Scott will be having celebrity guests, Dr. Art Uhlin being one of them. Don't want to miss it. Great programming every day here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Before I patch in the professor, please stand, take a knee, do what you feel is appropriate for the playing of our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming.
It is the beginning of the new year here in the great city of Marion and across the world via our website at WWGH1071.com. A little warmer this week than it was last week, although certainly it seems January-like. And I guess the good thing about Ohio is that the weather does tend to change and kind of keeps you guessing just a little bit. But even in Florida, it's been somewhat chilly. In northern Florida, they've had some freezing temperatures, even a few snowflakes. But in Boca Raton, home of Professor Ronald L. Fineman, it's not exactly been 80 or 90 degrees of late. They've had temperatures close to 40, but it's still, by our standards, somewhat summery. Dr. Fineman does join me often here on mid-morning coffee break, discussing the events of the day, discussing our commander-in-chief, Mr. Donald J. Trump, and whatever else might be on the agenda. Let's see if I have plugged in all the equipment properly. Ron, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Adam. I'm doing fine, and the temperature here now is about 60 degrees, but it was 39 on Sunday.
Yep.
So it's warmed up quite a bit by now.
Having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave, so even at 39 degrees, you didn't build any snowmen, but I think you mentioned you got out your long johns and your jacket. You don't really wear those too often there in southern Florida.
No, I don't. They sit in the closet and gather dust, but now I had to de-dust them, if there's such a word.
De-dust. Well, I guess we can make up words. Speaking of making up words, that's a hobby of the president. He certainly has expanded the vocabulary just a bit. Now, according to President Donald John Trump, he is, like, very smart. He is mentally stable, and he is just, I guess, the most fabulous person ever to inhabit the great world. Now, when you heard him say that, what was going through your brain?
I was pointing out on Facebook that nobody, even if you think you're smart, goes around saying to other people, I'm smart and a genius. That makes eyes roll and heads shake. That is totally inappropriate behavior. And honestly, one needs to be humble, but Donald Trump doesn't know how to be humble about anything. But he's not stable, and he's not a genius. One thing I've always wondered is, why don't the news media, when they have a chance, which is not often, say to him, President Trump, did you graduate cum laude from college? Did you graduate Phi Beta Kappa? Not that everybody does, but I would just ask him that, and also say, what was your ranking in the class? And I've read that there was one professor years ago who said he cut a lot of classes, and that he was actually one of the dumbest students in the class. So his claim of being brilliant, he certainly did not graduate with honors, because if he had, he would tell us that, and he doesn't actually say that.
Now, Ron, you're a pretty smart man. You have a PhD, Doctor of Philosophy. You've taught many classes, enlightened many brains. I'm sure many of your students...
I'm a genius or brilliant.
Right.
I do not say that. It's not appropriate.
I'm sure many of your students have gone on to being professors and authors like yourself, and very important members of society. So, safe to say your IQ is well over 100. But do you ever tell people that you're a genius? Do you ever tell people that you're a genius, that you're smart? Does that ever come up? Do you ever have to defend your intelligence or education, or do you pretty much let people decide based upon getting to know you?
I've never been asked to defend it, and I think most people respect my ability. I don't know if they think I'm a genius, and I don't think I really am, but they think I'm intelligent and, most important, a decent human being who cares about others, not just about talking about myself all the time. That's the worst trait anybody can have, to be so narcissistic, and I don't like anybody who's narcissistic.
So you would tend to believe that Donald Trump is the president of his own fan club.
Absolutely. In fact, there's never been anybody like him at all. And I want to point out today, Tuesday, January 9th, is Richard Nixon's 105th birthday.
You mean Tricky Dicky?
Said,
one of my favorite presidents, Richard Milhouse Nixon. 105. He would have been 105. That's quite cool.
Yeah, and the thing is, he always, he said, I'm not a crook. Well, this is a man who's saying I'm a stable genius. It's almost as hysterical as comment as Nixon made.
Right. Now, which do you think is more amusing? I'm not a crook, or I'm a genius?
I think Donald Trump is much more amusing than Nixon. Trump makes you laugh because you realize how preposterous and ridiculous his behavior is.
Right. Certainly, he's not one to shy away from saying what's on his mind. I mean, I do admire his being outspoken, but when you're president, you do kind of have to be a gentleman, and being outspoken can very, very possibly be taken too far, and I think that's one of his problems. Also, last Friday, one of my favorite vice presidents and former presidential hopefuls, Walter Mondale, turned 90. As you know, I'm quite a fan of the guy. I thought he was a great vice president.
I am also. He's a wonderful guy.
Right.
He's 90, and of course, Jimmy Carter is 93. So they are the second couple in a row. Straight couple is.
And when I was in college, I worked on the Mondale-Ferraro campaign, and they were not favored to win. They didn't win. In fact, they pretty much got blown away, but certainly a spirited effort. And Mondale, even if you don't like his politics, you respect him. He's a good man. He's honest. And certainly has been, to an extent, still in the public eye in retirement. And we do salute him on his recent 90th birthday. Now, one thing we have talked about in terms of politicians who are older is Orrin Hatch, and I guess he's finally decided to hang it up at the end of this term, and we pretty much decided
time
that
to go.
Right.
Yes.
That probably was a good idea that he has gotten just a bit too. I mean, we admire his tenure and his service to America, but he's gotten just a bit too old, out of lack of a better way to say it, and it might be time for some newer blood. Any thoughts?
Absolutely.
Any thoughts on that? I mean, we agree with the decision, right?
Absolutely, and I think Mitt Romney is probably going to run for that seat and probably win it, although there'll be a. But frankly, I think Romney will have the effect of being able to win because he won Utah overwhelmingly in 2012, and Trump won it by a much smaller margin because Mormons didn't like Trump. So I think the fact that, of course, Romney is a Mormon and is now a resident of Utah, I think there's a good chance he'll be in that seat, and it'll become a problem for Trump because he's not going to say how wonderful Trump is all the time.
One thing that's intrigued me, Ron, is
people will oppose him.
Right. The state that a politician is from, and I've always thought about Hillary Clinton. It's like, well, I thought she was from Arkansas. I mean, I know she was a native of New York City, but she was the first lady as the governor's wife of Arkansas. Then she runs successfully.
Well, actually, she was from Illinois. She grew up outside Chicago.
Right.
She's really from Illinois, but she moved to Arkansas when she, of course, married Bill Clinton. He ran for office.
Then she ran successfully for a senator from the state of New York. So it isn't, even at this point, entirely clear exactly where she's from. And I presume, Ron, the residency requirements to allow you to run for a national office, do they vary state by state, or is there a specific requirement? I mean, could I just say, okay, well, Vermont's a small state, and I'll move to Vermont and live there for 1 or 2 years, and I'll go run for Senate. I mean, certainly there's an ethical.
It depends on the state. New York has very liberal laws. Right. Robert Kennedy ran for Senate from New York in 1964, and his father had an apartment in Manhattan, which he claimed is his residence, but he never lived in New York, just as Hillary Clinton did not. And the same with James Buckley, conservative. Was from Connecticut, and he ran in New York, so we had three so-called carpetbagger and quote senators from New York: Robert Kennedy, James Buckley, the brother of William F. Buckley Jr., the famous conservative National Review publisher, and then Hillary Clinton. But that's New York. But many states, you have to have lived in the state at least a year, really lived in the state a year to be able to run. But New York is very, very open on that issue.
So the laws do vary state by state, but we would kind of agree that ethically you should be a resident. You don't have to have lived there your whole life, but at least be what would be considered by most people a resident of that state before running there. And that, I guess that was my thought with Clinton. It's like, okay, is she from New York? I guess I really wasn't totally sure, but I guess I was right, ironically, that she set up a residence there of some sort just to run as a senator. But does she really know New Yorkers' needs, because she really didn't live there? And Arkansas and New York are two very different states.
As is Illinois, where she grew up, yes.
Would you agree with me that, laws aside, there's an ethical obligation for a politician to live at least a reasonable amount of time and get a feeling that he or she is setting up roots there before running for a major office?
I would say in ideal terms, yes, probably at least a year's residence actually living there. But again, depending on how you look at it, people who are Democrats would be very happy that Robert Kennedy did serve in the Senate before he was assassinated, and that Hillary Clinton did serve in the early 2000s. But I think on ethical grounds, probably it would have been better to have been a resident for a year. And the same for James Buckley, the conservative who won the Senate seat one term in New York in the 1970s.
Right. It just does seem like the laws are kind of loose. And I know that came to my mind when she ran for Senate. And I guess it's coming back. Okay, I understand Romney is Mormon, and certainly he will be sympathetic and knowledgeable about the needs of the large Mormon population in Utah. But I thought he was from Massachusetts, and a Rocky Mountain state versus a major northeastern state are quite different. So,
well, I want to point out that Mitt Romney's father, George Romney, who was trying to run for president in 1968 but failed to get very far, was governor of Michigan. So actually, Mitt lived in Michigan a lot of his life, but he eventually moved to Massachusetts, but always had a connections to Michigan, Massachusetts, and Utah, all three.
I guess the diversity, if you've lived in multiple places, but again, there are, every state has specific needs, and I think you want to know about the needs of your state before you run for a major office. And I guess here in Ohio, Ron, everybody that I've seen run for Senate has been, as far as I know, an Ohioan. I mean, Mike DeWine, he's not certainly someone I pretty much support the views of, and he was senator, and now he's attorney general. He's been, as far as I know, a lifelong Ohioan from the Dayton area. Obviously, Metzenbaum, I don't know enough about his history as from childhood on, but as far as I know, he's always been an Ohioan. Obviously, John Glenn is an Ohio hero.
Yes,
an astronaut.
I wanted to mention about Romney and about Hillary Clinton that you could argue that each of them has lived in an eastern state, a midwestern state, and in the case of Romney, a far west state, and in the case of Hillary, a southern state. So they've had three different regions in each case they've lived in, which actually makes them more a national figure in that way, if you think about it.
Right. So I would guess the bottom line is, Ron, let the voters decide if they feel that, and they obviously felt that, Hillary Clinton had sufficient roots in New York State to run successfully as a senator? Do they feel that Romney has enough of a connection to Utah to run successfully? Let the voters decide. But I think we should take a look at this person's residence or lack of residence in a particular state. And is that person setting up roots somewhere just to win an election? But again, let the voters decide.
Yeah, I want to mention that if Mitt Romney wins that Senate seat, I think people are not thinking about the fact he might decide to challenge Trump or Mike Pence for the 2020 nomination. He's in his 70s, but look, we have other people in their 70s who have run. He's born in 1944, so actually he could run at age 75.
I guess we'll find out. Yeah, I mean, certainly Romney, whether or not you agree with his viewpoints, and I would say I pretty much do not agree with his viewpoints, he does have experience. He has lived in different states, again, three very different states, a Rocky Mountain state, the Midwest, and Massachusetts, and we don't question his intelligence and his, I think, ability to be a leader, but again, to stand on the issues, that might be another issue. Before we get to some more serious topics, Ron, I thought we'd talk about one that's still very related to public related to current events, but a little more humorous. I showed you that photo of Carson Jones, the gay son of Doug Jones, when he attended the swearing-in conducted by Vice President Mike Pence, and that rather unique look that he gave the Vice President. When you saw that photo, Ron, did you just giggle like I did, or did you have any thoughts about exactly what was Carson thinking when he was looking over at Mike Pence?
What he was thinking, I can't say on the radio, I don't think so, but obviously it would be the F word and a few others would be included. He gave him a look to kill, if there was such a thing, because he and his father certainly feels the same way.
So, without question, that...
So anti-gay and so anti-women,
right.
And his beliefs, it's really terrifying, it really is.
So, without question, that is perhaps one of the most classic looks ever given in a photo taken in quite a while. And what do you think Mike Pence was thinking when he saw Carson give him that look? Was he thinking, oh, you're just crazy, or maybe I should rethink my views? What do you think was going through his mind?
As you said, not rethink his views. I don't think he has an open mind. But yet there are those that wonder about his own sexuality. You know, people think that when someone goes around being anti-gay, so many cases, there was one case in Ohio of a state legislator recently who had a sexual affair in his office with a man, and he had to resign just this past couple of months. And he is apparently a good friend of the congressman in your area, who's making a name for himself as a person who wants to knock down the federal government and make it smaller. You know, I can't think of his name right now, the local congressman. You know who I'm talking about. What is his name again?
Mr. Jordan?
Yes. Jordan. And Jordan is also extremely anti-gay and very much called Freedom Caucus. And I just don't understand, you know, how people vote for someone like that. But that's what people do, I guess, you know, where they live. But I don't understand it. But this person who was in the state legislature had to resign, a real true hypocrite, claiming he was a good Christian. And that kind of thing is not being a good anything, Christian, Jewish, or Muslim.
Well, I guess that's what makes America great. Vote for whom you think is the best candidate. And if you don't like the people currently in office, well, vote them out. That's probably the best way to say it. We've heard that North Korea and South Korea, Iran, are trying to talk. And, of course, Korea has been a big headline, obviously, for a while, but especially since the beginning of the Trump presidency. Any thoughts on that? Do you think we can get to a resolution and try to keep some world peace?
I'm not sure what's going to happen in these talks between North and South Korea, but I think certainly having discussions is better than not. What I am very alarmed about since the new year began is that Trump went off on his crazy ranting tweets in which he was critical of Pakistan and decided he's going to withdraw aid from Pakistan. He's, of course, criticizing Iran and North Korea and also cutting off aid to the Palestinians. He's right in the first couple of days of the year, about a week ago, he's setting up a 2018 that's going to be much more tumultuous in foreign affairs, and I think it's just disgraceful what he's doing, and there's no control over this man, you know, and the man, I think, is mentally deranged. I'm more convinced of that, but nobody seems to want to do anything about it. That's very worrisome for the new year.
You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor on the line with me, Dr. Ronald Fineman from warm and somewhat sunny Florida, as we discuss world and national politics, elections, and a few lighter but more important topics. Again, another happy topic. Unfortunately, Ron, a lot of the news we talk about really isn't very positive, and it's kind of a shame. Certainly being in the media is a positive thing, but it seems like we're reporting things that are less than happy and might make us a little worrisome. But I think on the positive note, a few days ago, we broke a record as to the number of females who have served in the United States Senate. Speaking of Vice President Pence swearing in senators, he was rather busy. He swore in Tina Smith. She's the 51st woman to serve in the United States Senate and 22nd currently. Most female senators are Democrats, 17 Democrats, 5 Republicans. Any thoughts on that, Ron? We've all heard the joke, which is more of a serious. It's a joke, but it's more of a serious statement. A woman's place is in the House and the Senate. I'm sure you've heard that one. It's kind of a takeoff on a woman's place in the home.
I would say that Tina Smith, I think, will do a good job. She'll have to fight for her seat this year, actually, in the fall. I still am disturbed that Al Franken was forced out, but I think Tina Smith is a good replacement, and Mondale was there to back her up, just as Joe Biden was there to back up Doug Jones coming in. So we actually had 3 vice presidents posing together, of course, Biden and also Mondale, but also Mike Pence. And I did an entry on my blog talking about how outstanding Biden and Mondale were along with Al Gore, and how Mike Pence is not of the same caliber, but they were all posing together, because that's a very rare case to have 3 vice presidents posing, you know, being in the same place at the same time.
Now, with more women in the Senate, and again, it seems like women senators are more likely to be Democrats, but not necessarily. Is that going to change the face of politics? Will that make Donald Trump's job more difficult? Will it have a significant effect, or is the gender of the Senate not even that important?
Well, I think one extra woman senator is not going to matter, but there's a couple of seats that are going to be contested in the fall in Arizona and Nevada. We have strong Democratic women who are running for those seats, so there's a good chance we will have more women in the Senate, including for the Republicans, probably in Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn. Well, I'm no fan of them. If a congresswoman is running for the Senate, she probably will win that seat in Tennessee. So there probably will be at least 3 more women in the Senate. We may have close to 25. I think, although most will be Democrats, but if the Democrats gain control of the Senate, it could have an impact, yes.
So I guess we shall see. You mentioned in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, we could have 4 female senators hoping to occupy the White House in 2020, which would certainly be a record. Warren, Klobuchar, Harris, and Gillibrand. And they're from a diverse list of states, California, New York, Minnesota, and Massachusetts. Could that really happen, Ron? Could we have that many females in the 2020 primary?
I think all four could be competing, yes. But I have a feeling that some of them will have an easier time than others. I think Elizabeth Warren probably will have much more support than any of them because she's better known and more combative than the others. But I think Kamala Harris also, and Kirsten Gillibrand, who I'm not a big fan of course, has gotten noticed lately because of her work against sexual harassment. And then the one who I still like the most, who's probably the most moderate, but I think the most winnable of the four in the national campaign, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, I think will also run. They could all be competing, but certainly one of them is going to end up, at the top of the list, along with probably one man at the end.
Well, maybe the 90th birthday of a fellow Minnesotan, I think that's what you call him, Mr. Mondale, might be good for Ms. Klobuchar. I guess we'll find out, right?
Correct, of course, but I've always thought I've had people tell me she's not liberal enough, and I said, well, she comes from a liberal state, but I ought to work with people on the other side, and I do think if you're too far to the left, that you're not going to be elected in this country, unfortunately. I think we need someone more moderate left, and I think Amy Klobuchar is more moderate left than the other three people that are female that are running, or probably running.
Would you say that Klobuchar, in terms of on the political spectrum, is a bit like Clinton? Obviously, not as liberal as Sanders. And Clinton, she seems more moderate to centrist to me. Would you kind of put them at about the same?
I think she's probably not controversial like Hillary Clinton. I think she's not as outspoken as Hillary Clinton. But I think she just, in my mind, is a good mix, I think, of the proper kind of woman to be able to get a lot of men to vote for her. I really do think she could do that well. I think particularly Elizabeth Warren would turn off a lot of men, an awful lot of men, because of her confrontational manner. And it's strange how men can be confrontational, and that's considered to be good. People like Chris Christie and Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, but they're men. Men can get away with that. Women, it's still a problem if they come across as too confrontational, too much in your face. It's wrong, but it's the way it is. And that's why I think a woman who's not that way, goes.
So Klobuchar might be a good choice. I guess we'll find out. Certainly the commercials and the arguments over the next president, I'm sure they'll be starting soon. Just like Christmas time, the presidential election seems to start earlier and earlier every year. And certainly this next one will be an interesting one, to say the least. You wrote in your blog, Ron, on Sunday the 7th, concerns for 2018. The social safety net, the wall, health care obliteration, and environmental damage, all part of a second-year nightmare under Donald Trump. Why don't you share with our listeners more about that?
Yes, there's so many issues that are arising this year, but some of them are really crucial. And I think the issue of the wall, which is a waste of $18 billion, is crazy. And it's only going to divide the country more and promote more nativism. And we really don't need it. Illegal immigration is down. And meanwhile, the destiny of the dreamers under DACA is endangered. And I think that's a horrible thing. These kids came here at young ages. This is the only country. There isn't a deal that the Democrats back the wall, the expenditure on the wall, which is to me a pure waste of money. All right, so that's one issue. Now, the environment, of course, is always a big issue, and I'm a big environmentalist, and it's disgraceful what's going on in the Department of Energy and also the Department of the Interior and also in the EPA. So that's very disturbing. The issue of the social safety net, the Social Security of the New Deal and Medicare, Medicaid, and the Civil Rights Act, Civil Rights Act of 64-65 under LBJ. I think that the goal is to try to get rid of all these and, or at least cut them back. And that I'm very worried about because these are things that are so well established and there should be no debate about the social safety debt for the present and the long-term future. And then also Obamacare has still been signed up by millions, and it is very concerning that their goal seems to be to wipe out Obamacare completely this year and have no health care for millions of people. And that's just horrible. So, I mean, these are just some of the concerns. But I'm really, in the first week of the year, I'm really starting to feel that we have made to be done about it as long as the Republicans control the House and Senate. So hopefully the midterm elections will see a big transformation.
When you originally on with Scott Spears almost a year ago, in 2017.
Yes, in February of last year. That's correct. Yes.
Right. 2017. The main topic was a posting that kind of went viral by yourself that Donald Trump would not last very long. You were predicting probably the spring of 2018. Well, the spring of 2018 is only about 2.5 months away. Do you still stand by that? Do you still stand by that prediction?
By the time of Zachary Taylor, right, born in 92 days, which is May 27th of this year, I still believe, with all the revelations and the indictments and charges that are coming very soon from Robert Mueller, that Trump will not be there by May 27th. I still hold to that. I may be wrong. We'll see. But I can tell you this. If I'm correct, I'm going to boast all over the place. I'm going to be, for one day, an egotist about it.
So if that happens, you may be like our president, almost ironically, and say, well, I am a genius. I predicted it. And I'm just the...
No, just lucky.
Right.
But I think it might get me more viral. Yes, I do think so. And I guess it'd be nice if that happened, but more than what's good for me is what's good for the country. And having Trump out would be good, even though I am not happy with Mike Pence. Far from it. But I just think Trump is a loose cannon and very dangerous. I don't think Mike Pence, as far as world affairs, is a danger in the same way. I think he's more a danger to domestic affairs, however.
Ron, back on January 1st, you wrote in your blog about the growing danger of the 2018 and 2020 elections being hacked by the Russians and others with good technological skills. Why don't you tell our listeners more about that? And is that really a real risk? It seems like if the elections get hacked, people might say, why bother voting if my vote is going to be hacked?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, it's the fact that Russians are still involved. Everybody knows it. And also there's hackers from other nations such as China, North Korea, Iran, and Pakistan that seem to be working to manipulate and undermine our democratic system of government, and therefore the technological experts have a massive job ahead of them, because if we don't believe that our elections are fair, more and more people would stop voting, and that's exactly what Trump and the Republicans want. And the thing is, we have a president who has no ethics, morals, or scruples, and, you know, as far as they're concerned, they don't have an interest in favoring their party, but we cannot allow this to go on, because it's a danger to our whole democratic system of government.
Is there a solution? What? Because obviously with our world getting more technical every minute, this seems like it'll be a bigger problem every day. Is there a way to put this to bed finally and not worry about whether our vote will be hacked?
I think we're going to always have to worry about it from now on. I think, you know, every election we're going to have opinion polls are accurate. It'll be impossible to have any gauge of what is happening. And again, it could certainly have a psychological effect on voters saying, what's the point of voting? And that could, of course, destroy the whole idea of free elections. I don't think there is a simple answer. Unfortunately, it's going to remain with us for the long haul, I think.
So it's obviously going to be a bone of contention and something that we'll have to deal with for the foreseeable future. And unfortunately, because we want people to vote, we have low voter turnout, even for important elections. And even I'm thinking, why bother spending my time driving, waiting online to vote if it's going to be hacked? And I think we need a resolution, but exactly what the resolution is a different matter. As 2017 ended, Ron, certainly there were some serious declines in the approval rating for President Trump. Many statistics we could go over. I don't want to bore people with too many numbers, but whites supporting Trump dropped from 49% to 41%. Those 50 years of age or older from 47% to 38%. Currently, we're in the low 30s, about 32% versus 39% in February of 2017. Now, with 2018 shaping up to be a big year, I mean, not just the hacking issue, but obviously the Korea situation, health care, many other things that are floating around. Do you expect Donald Trump's approval rating to be continue to drop? Will it also continue to drop among middle-aged people and white people? What are your thoughts about that?
I would think so, but of course one can never be certain. The one problem I worry about is if we get into a war, there's a tendency for people to rally around the commander-in-chief, and I think the Republican Party knows that, so I don't think they have as much a concern about going to war, because it will help the economy, certainly, as far as those who make money from the war industries, and it will be opposition and say, we got to back the president, it's wartime, and we've never had a president defeated in wartime, never. Every time a president comes up for re-election, it's a war, he always wins. So it is a concern, but they are, you know, I do want to point out white evangelicals have dropped from 78% to 61%, you know, and this is before the new year began. This was on December 30th I was writing this, and even non-college, even white non-college support went from 56% to 46%, so he is dropping 5 to 17 points in 9 months in many different groups. And meanwhile, women, young voters, suburbanites, college educated, African Americans, Latinos, and Asian Americans are all clearly going over to the Democratic Party. But again, if the election's a hack, it may not make a difference. It may mean that, you know, we'll think it's going a certain way and we'll never know the truth of what really went on. So it's still a great concern.
Now, as we've talked about, recent results in New Jersey, Virginia, and of course the famous Alabama election have been somewhat surprising, with Democrats suddenly doing quite well when they weren't really expected to. And kind of happens, you have a Republican in a high office, I mean the highest office in the world, the president, and people aren't really happy with him. They decide to, so to speak, take their business elsewhere. But bottom line is, it'll be another busy year, Ron, for the news media and for any politically related controversy. Of course, it is interesting, but we like to have leaders that we can trust, and it seems like Donald Trump's support is floundering just a bit. White evangelicals, this is quite a large drop, went from 78% to 61%. Now, they certainly had a large part of Trump's, large thing to do with Trump's victory back in November of 2016. Was that maybe the most?
I also want to point out, that's out by Michael Wolff, I think is going to undermine Trump a lot, because it's really a devastating discussion about his incompetence and how his people around him do not trust him or believe that he knows what he's doing. So I think that Michael Wolff book is going to be a great bestseller, and it's going to undermine, and that's why he's going after Michael Wolff.
And we have men from 45% to 40%, Republicans from 84% to 76%. But looking at these stats that you published on your blog, Ron, white evangelicals are the only group that's not related to a party that is still above 50% and barely, again, going from 78% to 61%. And I would also think that Mike Pence, certainly, I would imagine white evangelicals are very supportive of him. His being vice president may have something to do with that. And I guess
I agree on that. I think it definitely is a factor. And the thing about Mike Pence is, at least as far as we know, he has a clean background morally. As far as we know, well, that is true about Mike Pence. But I wonder if we know the whole story about Mike Pence. Just wondering. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And again, you and I don't agree with a lot of his politics and a lot of his social views, but he would appear to be a man with a decent set of ethics, certainly is experienced, and, out of lack of a better term, he's more of a gentleman than other people that are involved in White House politics. So that has as an effect on it, for sure. White non-college support going from 56% to 46%. So that dropping below the 50% margin, and that certainly might turn a few heads.
Yeah, I want to mention that 2 days ago on Sunday, Stephen Miller, one of the close advisors to the president, was on CNN. Such a nasty person. Jake Tapper ended up cutting him off at the end. It was real confrontation there on Sunday, and the man really undermines Trump, I think, but he is like a mini Trump, and it just makes me disgusted. This man is 32 years old, he's Jewish born, and he's a fascist in his viewpoints, and he's been this way for years, and he worked for Jeff Sessions when he was a senator, and Michelle Bachmann when she was a congresswoman, before associating with him in any sense. The man is a disgrace. He really is.
Before we close out, Ron, do you want to make another prediction can you give us maybe an exact date as to when you think Donald Trump may no longer be in office, and exactly the reason? Would it be the amendment allowing Mike Pence to remove him from the presidency? Would it be a resignation, an impeachment, or what do you think might be the reason for
I still still think he will resign, because I think that it's very likely that his son, Donald Jr., and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, even possibly his daughter, Ivanka, could be indicted by Robert Mueller soon. And I would say by May 27th, and I don't really know what date, but I just like to joke about the fact, why not March 15th, the Ides of March, when Julius Caesar was assassinated? So it's a joke, really, but I think it will happen in the next few months. I think he will be forced out by resignation to save his son, his daughter, and his son-in-law.
So you're thinking, again, late winter, early spring may be the time.
The latest in May.
And I guess we shall find out. That's probably the best way to say it. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today, Ron, before we call it a show?
Well, I want to wish everybody a happy new year, of course. It's now January 9th, but I haven't had a chance to say that, so I want to wish everyone that, and wish you a happy new year, and hope this is one of many interviews this year, because we had 32 interviews last year, 24 with you, and 8 with, you know, 8 with Scott, and I'm hoping there'll be many more this year.
Okay, and last but not least, you certainly deserve a promo or two. Tell us about your book on presidential assassinations and where our listeners can purchase that publication.
Sure. Okay, it's published by Roman Littlefield. It's called Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, published in 2015, and in paperback last March 2017, very from Amazon or from Books A Million or Barnes & Noble. And, of course, I'm also, besides on the ProgressiveProfessor.com, I'm on Facebook under my name, Ronald Feynman, and also under the Progressive Professor, and also under Assassinations, and I'm also at PolitHist, PolitHist on Twitter. And I welcome everyone to communicate with me.
And thanks again, Ron. Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, a frequent commentator here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.
Thanks so much.